From Brennan to the Boca Chiel, from Lummi to La Push, and from the lordly Sawduck to lovely Duckabush. From Samish to Sammamish, Suquamish to Quilicene, the climate is so friendly, it's a land that's evergreen.
Hello, and welcome to the History of the Evergreen State podcast. I'm your host and producer, John C., and thank you for joining me today for episode 139, Moxie, the Hops Capital of the World. The Catholic missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate were the first non-natives to settle in the Yakima Valley in south-central Washington. In 1847, at the request of Chief Kamiakin, Oblate missionaries traveled to the Yakima Indians and spent some time with them. A cottage was built near Kamiakin's Yakima village in 1848 by the Oblates Charles Murray Pandosi and Eugene Casimir Chiros. In 1849, Pandosi was assigned to a temporary mission in the Moxie area for the winter, but his life was threatened by the son of another Yakima chief, Owai, who transported him to Autanum Creek, which is located west of Moxie. In 1852, Kamiakin granted permission to the Oblates to build a church on the Autanum called St. Joseph Mission. Kamiakin granted permission to the Oblates to build a church on the Autanum called St. Joseph Mission. At the time, the site on the Autanum served as Kamiakin's summer camp. The missionaries baptized an estimated 400 people at the chapel, including Kamiakin's children, according to estimates. Missionaries helped Kamiakin dig irrigation ditches with the help of locals. One of these, known as Kamiakin's Ditch, was 1,300 feet long and supplied water to a huge garden where potatoes, squash, corn, and wheat were produced. Possibly the first irrigation canal in the region, as well as an inspiration for early non-native inhabitants, the structure lived on in memory for years afterwards. Following the Yakima Indian War of 1855 to 1858, non-native immigrants began coming to the Yakima Valley slowly over the years. Field and Mortimer Thorpe, his wife Margaret Bounds Thorpe, and their children were among some of the first to arrive. They were originally from Missouri, but in 1844, they made the decision to relocate to Polk County, Oregon, and begin a new life. They continued their journey to the Klickitat Valley in Washington in 1858. After a series of unsuccessful moves, frontiersman Thorpe made the decision to relocate once again, this time to the Moxie Valley with a herd of more than 250 Durham cattle and 60 horses. The majority of the family stayed behind for a while. A.C. Myers and A.C. Snelling were employed by him, and he brought two of his sons to work with him on the project. To house his cattle herders, Thorpe constructed a two-story cottonwood cabin complete with a mud roof and floor, as well as a fireplace in the corner that served as a stove. There were only a few pieces of furniture in the cabin. He included a tiny garden in his plans as well. The remainder of the family moved from Klickitat to Moxie 4 months later on the 15th of February, 1861, when he had established himself in the community. On the other side of the Yakima River from the mouth of Autanum Creek was the Thorpe Farmstead, which was positioned near the cliff. Thorpe and his sons, as well as Charles Amanius Splon, looked after the livestock. Because the ground had not been watered, it was covered with sagebrush and bunch grass that stood 4 to 6 feet high. It was an excellent grazing area for cattle and horses. The family initially resided in the log cabin until a larger structure was constructed. Measuring 25 by 16 feet, with a dirt roof and a puncheon floor composed of planks that had been hewn flat on one side and placed on stilts. The Thorpes were the first non-native inhabitants of the Moxie area for a short period of time, but before they could enjoy their new home in tranquility, word of Moxie's existence traveled swiftly. Additional new settlers began coming within a few weeks of the initial arrivals. Following an Indian road known as Conowoc Pass into the Moxie Valley, settlers' carts marked the beginning of their settlement in what is now known as the Moxie Valley. Alfred and Martha Bounds Henson became some of the first to arrive, just a few weeks after the Thorpes, and they brought with them their 5 children. Soon after, other people arrived, including 4 of Charles Splon's brothers. These families were regarded as the first permanent residents in Moxie, and their names became synonymous with the town's history. Dulcina Thorpe, the oldest daughter of the Thorpe family, was married to Charles Splon in the fall of 1861. Following her death in 1873, Charles would marry Melissa, the sister she had left behind. The Thorpe family's second-floor residence served as the site of the first school founded in the Moxie area. Letitia Haynes was the first educator in Moxie, having started in 1862. A one-room schoolhouse would later be erected 1 mile south of the town in 1864. Haynes was a teacher there until 1882, when she retired after teaching 5 Thorpe children, her daughter, and numerous other kids. During the winter of 1861-62, the settlers' cattle herds were threatened by heavy snowfalls that accumulated up to 18 inches in some places, with snow and ice practically preventing them from grazing on the pastures. Despite the difficult first winter, most of the cattle and horses were in good health and able to graze by the spring of the following year. There were a total of 7 animals lost, but no horses were among them. In 1864, Dr. L.H. Goodwin and his nephew Thomas Goodwin were among the newcomers to Moxie. Yakima County was officially founded the next year on the 21st of January, 1865, by the Washington Territorial Legislature. During the same year, John McAllister relocated to Moxie, and the following year, a gradual but continuous stream of French-Canadian immigrants, the majority of whom were Roman Catholic, began to arrive at the settlement. Settlers of Dutch ancestry, most of whom came from the Midwest, also began to establish themselves in the Moxie area. The Thorpe home served as the site of the first court session in Moxie, which took place in 1866. Among the first cases heard was Alfred Henson versus John McAllister, in which Henson claimed that McAllister had threatened his life. It had reached the point where Henson was forced to remain at the Thorpe home under protection until McAllister calmed down and provided the requisite bond money. In 1867, the newly established town was given the name Moxie. The Yakima Indians of the surrounding area named a large warm spring on the Thorpe property Moxie, a word that roughly means edible root, and the new settlers took the name for the place as their own. Egbert and Angeline Honey Towel French were the first to open and operate a store in Moxie. Charles Splon attempted to establish the first post office in the area in late 1868, but was unsuccessful. In Kittitas County, mail for Moxie settlers was deposited at the home of Leonard Thorpe on Tanium Creek. Moxie's postmaster, Leonard Thorpe, was appointed to the position on the 2nd of May, 1870. Mailboxes were set up in a variety of sites to be stocked once a week. A new postmaster in Moxie, George William Goodwin, was appointed on the 23rd of March, 1871. Over the years, a large number of residents eventually served as postmaster at one point in time. After a period of fast expansion in Moxie, Mortimer Thorpe made the unexpected choice to relocate to Tanium Creek in the Upper Kittitas, near the present-day settlement of Thorpe. Thorpe, the first new resident in what would become Moxie, had established a solid relationship with Native Americans and later settlers in the area, but he eventually left for the Kittitas Valley for the rest of his life. Around the year 1870, Charles Carpenter relocated to the Yakima Valley. He started growing hops at his property in Ontanum, which is roughly 15 miles west of Moxie on the other side of the Yakima River. Carpenter's father owned a farm in Constable, New York, where he produced hops for beer brewing. Carpenter utilized rootstock from his father's farm to grow modest hop crops for his own use. He had no idea that he was setting the stage for what would eventually become the world's largest hop-producing region. While the original settlers concentrated on livestock keeping, an increasing number of experiments were conducted in crop production, which was initially restricted to regions near streams due to the extreme aridity of the region. The initial attempts to divert water for irrigation were primarily aimed at keeping gardens and small orchards in good condition. An attempt to grow fruit trees was finally being attempted in greater numbers, though Alfred Henson established an orchard that didn't produce fruit for 9 years after it was planted. A total of 150 fruit trees were planted on Thomas Goodwin's farm, and many of the Dutch settlers built orchards in their new home. Beginning in 1883, construction on the Northern Pacific Railway line that would run through Yakima County began. In December of 1884, the Northern Pacific Railroad reached and bypassed the existing Yakima City, constructing a station in the area that would eventually become known as North Yakima, now Yakima. When the new rail line opened in 1885, it brought an influx of French Canadian and Dutch immigrants to Moxie, with many of them coming from Minnesota's northern regions. Those who were able to afford to purchase greater plots of property from the railroad were among the first to arrive as more people began to move into the Moxie Valley. They banded together, stayed together, shared fellowship, intermarried, and welcomed newcomers into their midst. With the help of other members of the interconnected Hubbard and Bell families, Gardner Green Hubbard, a founding member of the National Geographic Society and father-in-law of inventor Alexander Graham Bell, founded the Moxie Company in 1886. The company was also known as the Moxie Farm and the Moxie Plantation, and it served as an experimental farm. During this time, it removed sagebrush and bunch grass from the area and attempted to turn it into agricultural production. There were 6,400 acres total on the plantation, which was divided between irrigated land in the valley itself and rangeland on the upper slopes. The Moxie Company constructed canals and ditches, some of which are still in use in the 21st century, to transport water to dry but fertile territory in order to evaluate the feasibility of irrigated agriculture. The corporation raised cattle and hogs and farmed a variety of crops, including tobacco, barley, wheat, oats, cotton, corn, fruit, alfalfa, and hops, as well as numerous other fruits and vegetables. The majority of the land in the area belonged to the firm. The land of the Moxie Company was gradually acquired and homesteaded by a group of pioneers. In 1955, the corporation would formally be dissolved by its stockholders. The arrival of the Northern Pacific heralded the beginning of a period of significant agricultural productivity in the Yakima Valley, which included Moxie. Much of the desert region, which receives an average annual rainfall of only 9.33 inches, was still covered in natural sagebrush and bunch grass, but when irrigation water became more readily available, the area proved to be an outstanding farming location thanks to its rich soils and mild sunny climate. The desert-like climate provided approximately 300 days of sunshine each year on average. When it comes to temperature, the winter average was 37 degrees, spring average was 63 degrees, and fall average was 64. During the early stages of land cultivation, farmers used a process known as till irrigation, which is now considered inefficient and a great source of soil erosion. The Yakima, Natchez, and Teton rivers, as well as minor streams that originated in the Kittitas Valley, provided the water for irrigation purposes. The Union Gap Canal, also known as the Fowler Ditch, was constructed in 1884, and it was the first of four irrigation ditches or canals that would eventually transport water into Moxie. In 1888, it was followed by the Moxie Canal, in 1889 by the Hubbard Canal, and in 1901 by the Sela-Moxie Canal, all of which are still in operation to this day. The Moxie area was located at an elevation of approximately 1,000 feet above sea level. The canal diversions were located at a depth of 1,058 feet. Due to the elevation change, canal waters traveled more slowly. However, by the 1880s, some grapevines had already been planted in the Moxie Valley, even before all of the ditches had been built. Some of the best hops and alfalfa farms were watered by the Moxie and Hubbard canals, as were some of the most productive cotton fields. In 1905, the Sela-Moxie Irrigation District was founded. Mud Springs, 4 miles east of Moxie, was the site of the area's first artesian well, which was drilled in 1890. By 1903, more than 30 wells were in operation in the Moxie Valley's artesian well basin, which covered an area of less than 6 square miles. Due to the expansion of irrigation and the purchase of land by settlers to begin farming, cattle ranching, which had been a mainstay since the early days of Moxie, was quickly displaced to other areas. When the Moxie Valley was first settled as a farming community, hops was one of the most important cash crops grown there. Hops performed admirably in terms of both quantity and quality. Fruit orchards of various kinds were also quite common across the area. Hops are a perennial crop, meaning that they will continue to grow year after being harvested. As a result, there was no need for replanting, which greatly reduced the cost of both cultivation and production. However, due to the effort that was necessary to trim, train, and pick hops, they were both expensive and labor-intensive to harvest. Hops were traditionally planted on poles, but when trellis systems were invented, it became customary to knot the plants together instead. After harvesting was completed and crops were divided, farmers spent the months of October through January planning for the following year. It was necessary to push hop leaves and vines back into the soil, pluck, replace or establish trees, and negotiate and accept contracts in order to move on. Throughout February, preparations were made and livestock was taken care of. While the weather remained unpredictable from March to May, the soil had been prepared in preparation for the planting. Sugar beets grew well, and orchards were grafted to improve their chances of survival. Hops were irrigated in May, and then training hops began as soon as the hop vines had grown to a sufficient length. From June through August, the peak period for egg production in the area for chickens had also been reached. The hay had to also be harvested and then stored away from both pests and the weather. Making a field ready for watering took an inordinate amount of time and effort. The busiest months of the year for farmers were from August through October. It was harvest season, and everything needed to be in working order. Every member of the family, as well as hired hands and local migrant pickers, had to work together to complete the project before the cold season arrived and ruined the crop. Preparing for the hop harvest was a major event in and of itself. Before the pickers arrived, farmers made preparations for them. There were many different sorts of pickers, along with their temporary campgrounds. The majority of pickers put in 10 or more hours per day doing grueling work. The hops culture was made just a little more enjoyable for both adults and children through various community social gatherings throughout the harvest season. Hops harvesting brought the entire family and the neighborhood together. Things moved at a much slower pace back then than they do today, and it was not until the mid-20th century that tractors replaced horses as the primary mode of transportation. Trucks and automobiles were conspicuously absent. As hop harvesting came to a close, school began, life settled back down, and preparations for the following year's crops began once more in earnest. It was John Weyenberg who became the first person in the neighborhood to own a telephone, which was a crank-operated device that was mounted on his wall. Lines were extended to serve the rest of the valley by the Moxie Telephone Company, which later came to be known as the Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Company. As the population of Moxie continued to increase, so did the number of enterprises. The Champeau brothers, as well as Arthur and Frank Albert, owned and operated a successful general merchandise store in the area for years. Construction on a 12-mile extension of the Northern Pacific Railway to connect North Yakima to Moxie began on the 17th of July 1909, with the goal of providing freight and passenger service between the two towns. The project was finished the next year. Trains traveled twice a day and had variable schedules. For example, if a train man was aware that a passenger was planning to travel from Moxie to North Yakima, the train may be held up until that passenger arrived. In December of 1910, a wooden train depot with a footprint of 30 by 60 feet and a red paint job was completed. The depot was divided in half, with one side serving as a waiting room and the other serving as a freight and post office. Phil Ditter and his son Joe platted land for a new town site near the train depot on 40 acres that Phil Ditter had purchased from Leon Chiron Sr. This marked the beginning of the development of Moxie City. Following extensive consultation with local homeowners and the church's trustees, Catholic parishioners relocated their church to the new town, therefore signaling to others that they may also relocate their residences. The Champeau & Brothers General Merchandise Store was the first business to establish itself in the new town site, followed by Paul LaFramboise's blacksmith shop at a short time later. Numerous new structures were constructed across the city, including a community center and drugstore, as well as a shoe shop, an inn and pub, as well as two lumber enterprises. Electric power lines were initially installed in Moxie in 1911, and by the 1930s, electricity was available on 13% of the farms in the area. The Moxie drainage system was complete in 1912. The technique lowered the water table, providing more growing space for plant roots and prevented alkali from rising to the surface of the water. During the United States' participation in the First World War, a large number of young men went off to fight, resulting in a scarcity of farm labor. The Spanish flu outbreak of 1918-1919, which occurred concurrently with the war and caused problems in Moxie by requiring the town to be quarantined for up to 6 weeks. According to reports, no one in the town died as a result of the virus, but it did take its toll, as we all know, going through the last couple of years. A financial investment was required for Moxie City to flourish, and incorporating as a town allowed for the collection and use of tax money on a more localized basis. Moxie City was officially established on the 27th of April, 1921. Mayor Arthur J. Tupin was elected, and members of the city council were also seated. Following his service in the First World War, Tupin went on to manage a business in Croxton, Minnesota. It was in 1920 that he made the trip to Moxie to visit family. He purchased the O'Laughlin Hardware Store in February and returned to the area on the 1st of March with his mother and two sisters to reopen the business. James O'Laughlin would eventually sell him his insurance company and hop supply lines as well. Within a decade of its founding, the Moxie area had earned the title Hops Capital of the World. This reputation has endured into the 21st century, with the Yakima Valley accounting for a majority of the nation's hop production, accounting for an estimated 77% of the overall harvest. Hops production increased substantially starting in the 1870s, when Charles Carpenter began growing hops using rootstock from his father's hop farm, and continued to grow exponentially until the present day. Six generations later, in 2020, the Carpenter family would still be in possession of the property and would continue to grow hops in the surrounding area. Many other families, including the Peralts, Smiths, Cullmans, Brulots, Sauves, Van Horns, Housers, Davidsons, Weathers, and Gastlings, have also owned and operated hops farms over the course of its history. Loftus and his family relocated to Moxie in 1920 in order to work on the railroad. They soon began cultivating a variety of crops as well as raising several types of animals. 12 years later, B.T. and Leota Loftus purchased a 5-acre hop farm and began growing hops. The Loftus Ranch was one of the greatest hop growers in the area more than a century after the family first settled there. The Great Depression of the 1930s had an influence on Moxie and its hop farmers, just as it had on people all around the world at the time. Due to the financial panic that gripped the country in 1931, the Moxie State Bank had to close its doors to its creditors. Hops were refused, contracts were breached, and 2 years' worth of unsold harvest accumulated. There was simply just no money available. Those who lived on the farm, however, did not suffer the same consequences as those who lived in the cities. They were already growing a large portion of what they were. Although money was in short supply, trading and bartering was something that anybody could participate in. After Prohibition was repealed in 1933, hops production rebounded, and the ensuing mobilization for the Second World War contributed to the conclusion of the Great Depression. The 40s heralded the beginning of a new era in agriculture for the Moxie community, as local farmers began to utilize mechanical equipment much more. When Wilfred E. Rivard purchased a stationary hop-picking machine in the spring of 1941, he quickly set about getting it going on his farm. This device could harvest a crop in less time than it would take 50 workers to do, yet it would only require 9 people to operate the machine. Following the end of the Second World War in 1945, an increasing number of people were able to purchase these amenities. Hop camps began to diminish as a result of the introduction of new technological methods, which greatly reduced the number of people required to harvest the hops. Hops remained important, and the Moxie Hop Festival was established in 1947 by a group of businessmen, with the first festival taking place in August of that year. Originally intended as a fundraiser for the local community, the festival has evolved into an annual celebration of the hop crop. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss a new episode. Doing so really helps the show to grow and to expand to a new audience, so any help that you can give in that regard will be greatly appreciated. Sources for this episode include the Washington Historical Quarterly, History of the Pacific Northwest, Oregon and Washington website, HistoryLink.org, the Yakima County Historical Society, Washington Rural Heritage, the Washington Secretary of State's website, the Seattle Times, and Remembering Yakima by Those Who Were There by Gary L. Jackson. Thank you for listening to episode 139, Moxie, the Hops Capital of the World. Episode 140 will be released next week. A special thank you goes out to Alan Hirsch for providing the music for the podcast. If you have any questions about the show, please contact historyoftheevergreenstatepod@gmail.com. Thank you once again for listening to another episode of the History of the Evergreen State podcast. And until next week, I'm your host and producer, John C.
There's peace on the Skokomish, on the Queets, and on the Hull. There's calm on the Nisqually, born of ageless ice and snow. A land that nature loves so much, she stays the whole year round. I trade a royal palace for a shack on Puget Sound. There's Chimicum and Stillicum, where spouts the gooey duck. The singing Stillaguamish and the swirling Skookumchuck. And Moclips and Copalis, where the razor clams abound. A little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound. A little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound.